Hello and welcome to the Jesuit Border Podcast. This podcast explores the humanitarian response along the U.S.-Mexico border from a Catholic perspective. My name is Brian Strasburger.
And I'm Joe Noya. We're with Del Camino Jesuit Border Ministries, located in the Diocese of Brownsville, Texas.
This podcast aims to humanize the migrant experience by sharing stories from our ministry and highlighting some of the amazing work that people are doing along the border and throughout the country.
The Jesuit Border Podcast is edited and produced by the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the U.S. and hosted by the Jesuit Post. Let's begin.
Vamos!
In this episode, we're going to talk about almsgiving.
We will be interviewing Sister Rose Patrice, who is a sister with the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and someone who we collaborate with quite frequently here in the Rio Grande Valley. Stay tuned for that interview, but first, let's talk a little bit about this Lenten theme of almsgiving.
Almsgiving has a number of ways of kind of showing itself, and I think we kind of witnessed such a manifestation, if you will, relatively recently. There was a group of students from Boston College High who came down to visit, and as one does in Texas, they went to Whataburger.
As one does.
You know? You got to check that box. Got to prove you were here. You know, go to Whataburger. Yeah. And while there, they encountered a migrant family who had nothing. And they didn't hesitate. They were just, you know, reaching in their pockets left and right. Their own pockets. They were just reaching.
Just to clarify. They were reaching into the poor migrant's pockets to steal from them.
Yeah. Reaching in their own pockets, and they were buying burgers left and right for this family. You know, so this kind of traditional understanding of almsgiving, this giving or spending money for someone else's good, and they just jumped right in without hesitation. Yet generosity can show itself in other ways, and this group also exemplified these more, quote, non-traditional ways of almsgiving. This group spent a lot of time at the Humanitarian Respite Center in McAllen. Some of them spoke Spanish and put that skill right to work. For example, we were traveling with a nurse who didn't speak Spanish, and she saw a pregnant woman at the center who was feeling sick, and one of these students jumped right in to provide translation for the nurse and the pregnant woman.
Yeah, it was kind of a dramatic moment. We're in the middle of celebrating Mass, and there was a little bit of a commotion because this pregnant woman started to lose her strength and looked like she was going to faint. And so a couple people helped carry off to the side, and this nurse who was visiting us for the few days runs over to help attend to her. And it's like, oh, well, this is perfect. I'm a nurse. Let me see what I can do. Only problem is the nurse doesn't speak any Spanish.
No Spanish.
And so it's just so impressive to see one of the BC High kids immediately jump up and run right over, knowing that he would be able to help and facilitate the conversation by translating.
Yeah, and it's not like someone gave him a nudge saying, hey, maybe you should, maybe, like, no, it was almost like this instinctive response. It was the self-propelled thing. And even the students who didn't speak Spanish at all, they still jumped right in and gave whatever they could, whatever they had. And one of the most popular ways was just playing soccer with the kids. You know?
Like, yeah.
And that brought life. Mm-hmm. And that was a way of being generous. I feel like these students give useful, creative examples of almsgiving, both in ways that are traditionally understood and just giving whatever you have for someone else's good.
That's right. At the end of the day, almsgiving really is about the spirit of charity, giving generously from what you have. And sure, we traditionally think about that as financial contributions, which are important for us to always be reflecting on. How are we able to give of what we earn, not to think of it only and always as just our own, but to have a spirit of generosity, but also how else can we think about it more expansively in terms of any gifts or talents or experiences that we have that we're able to give. When I think about that, I think about this crazy story that happened last month. You know, we encounter migrants with a number of needs, and that includes women who might be in the late term of their pregnancy. And as we know, babies come when they want to come, babies come where they want to come, and sometimes we don't have as much control over that as maybe we'd want to in terms of being in the safest environment surrounded by medical professionals and even family and friends as need be. Well, I wake up one morning here and I see texts that a pregnant woman had gone into labor on the bridge in the early morning hours where she was waiting to be processed by U.S. border agents. And in these texts, it includes a video, and I'm looking at this video. It's incredible. It shows her after delivering being helped up into a wheelchair, Then a woman takes the baby and places it on her chest, and she's taken into an ambulance to bring her to a hospital to make sure that she and the baby are okay. Well, that same day in the afternoon, we roll into the Humanitarian Respite Center in McAllen, the shelter that we visit that's on the U.S. side where people just stay for a couple days as they're arranging their transportation or less. And there weren't a lot of people there that day, maybe a couple dozen people. And so we just kind of went around. We were just having conversations with individual groups, asking them, you know, where are you coming from? Where are you headed to? Do you have your transportation figured out? And things like that. Well, I meet this couple from Venezuela, and they told me they entered that morning very early with a CBP-1 appointment. And then the woman looks at me just shaking her head. She says, "And I caught a baby on the bridge this morning." She was sitting there waiting for the appointment, and they come along to ask all the people lined up for the with their appointments if any of them have medical experience. And at first she tells me, she says, "You know, Father Brian, I was afraid to raise my hand because I know that Northern Mexico is dangerous. I was worried it was some trick or some trap to isolate me. But then I thought to myself, I said, nope. I would not feel right as a nurse," because she's a nurse by profession, "as a nurse if I didn't raise my hand and someone suffered something because I didn't step forward." So she raises her hands up reluctantly. She gets out onto the bridge, and right away she realizes what's going on. There is a woman there, and she is in labor, and that baby is coming. So what does she do? Straight up on that bridge.
Yeah.
That baby's coming. You know, like I said, babies come when and where they want. You never know. You can't always plan for it the way you'd want to. And so she tears her bag off. She gets down on her knees. She says, "All right, give me some gloves."
Noted.
No medical gloves on the middle of the bridge between U.S. and Mexico, unfortunately. And so she just goes in. She said, "Okay, this is how we're doing it." She's like, "You know, I don't even know what I use to cut the umbilical cord. I'm just like, give me something. We got to do this." Delivers the baby. The afterbirth catches this baby. And I mean, my jaw is just on the floor as she's sharing this story. And I look at her. I said, "You know what? I think I have a video of you." And so I show her the video that I'd gotten that morning, and she is just transfixed looking at it. And she says, "That's me. That's me." She's the one holding the baby who hands it to the mother when she's placed in the wheelchair. And she just kept shaking her head and just couldn't believe this moment and this experience. And here she was. She used her gifts as a nurse, as someone who had delivered about 10 babies or so before, she told me. And despite that initial fear, it was that spirit of generosity that went out that said, "I would hate to know that someone, you know, was harmed or some bad came about because I just sat there and stayed silent. But instead, let me be generous. How can I respond?"
And kind of like a generosity out of duty in some ways. Kind of like we have like this, a responsibility to be generous with what we have.
That's right. Yeah. Sense of responsibility with her medical profession and background. I need to put this experience to use. I need to offer it at the service of others. That's why I became a nurse to begin with. Of course, there was one thing that she was upset about, because when she took off her bag on the middle of that bridge, she never got it back. And it had her cell phone in it. Luckily, her other official documents, passport, things like that, were with her husband, but she didn't have her cell phone. And now her bus was leaving in just a couple hours, and so she basically just resigned herself to, "Yeah, my bag and my phone got stolen." Well, that was unacceptable to us. And so we started contacting anybody we could that we could think of. We contacted Mexican border officials to go out on the bridge and see if anyone who was waiting in the line had it. We contacted people to reach out to CBP on the bridge to see if they knew what happened. We were asking other migrants in the shelter, "Did you see when this baby was born? Did you see what happened to this lady's bag?"
Full-on Encyclopedia Browning. Just, "We're going to solve the case of the missing bag."
Exactly. "We're going to get to the bottom of this, you know?" And sure enough, eventually it emerges after, you know, some phone calls and some people talking. A migrant had heard that, "Oh, yeah, I think the bag was found. I think they turned over to Border Patrol." Someone reached out to Border Patrol. We ended up finding out that, yes, Border Patrol has it. "Can she come here to pick it up?" Well, this lady's not, you know, driving her car, right? She just crossed in the U.S. She's waiting for a bus. She's about 15 miles away from the Border Patrol station. But thankfully, someone from Border Patrol agrees to deliver it to the shelter, and she's going to get it before she leaves for her bus station, for her bus to leave. She was so grateful. She was so grateful to, "Oh, you know, don't know how much this means. I'm so grateful. I can't believe I'm going to get my cell phone back. This is so great." And we're just like, "Stop. Listen, just stop. You caught a baby this morning.
I know.
You were on the bridge and you stepped forward and you caught a baby. So please, like, thank you for your gratitude. But really, all of us are trying to help you out because we're so amazed and so grateful for the amazing thing that you did. Giving of yourself, that sense of gift, that sense of almsgiving. And so that's the theme we want to play with this episode. And we have a great interview coming up that connects with this theme of self-gift and of generosity. And that's with Sister Rose Patrice, Immaculate Heart of Mary sister, IHM sister. And so stay tuned for that interview coming up next. We are thrilled to welcome to this episode of the podcast our good friend and collaborator in mission, Sister Rose Patrice, a sister with the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. Humbled, surprised, but I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, we are thrilled to talk to you. You know, we've done a lot of ministry here together in the Rio Grande Valley since your community moved down here. So I wonder if you could start by telling our listeners a little bit about what it was that brought the Immaculate Heart of Immaculate Heart of Mary sisters here to the Rio Grande Valley, and kind of the timeline and how you got involved in this mission.
So in the summer of 2021 or 2020, Catholic Charities asked women religious to come to the border for the summer and to welcome the migrants and to work with the migrants with Catholic Charities. 100 congregations responded.
Wow. Okay.
So we were one of the 100 congregations, and there were about 33 of us who came down at different times during the summer. Well, after the summer, then the IHM sisters, three congregations of the IHM sisters, talked about making this a permanent ministry down here at the border. So some sisters came down and checked out all along the border and decided that McAllen and Reynosa would be the best place to be. So we did that, and the very next year, the very next July, we were down here. We drove down and stayed with the Mercy Sisters for a couple weeks and found a house to rent. And here we are. We're grateful to be here.
Yeah, it's kind of a new mission for the IHM Sisters in the same way that our mission for the Jesuit community is very new, too. You know, we came down and started our permanent presence here in July of 2021. So basically just about a year before you came down. I remember meeting with some of the IHM sisters, including Sister Mary Elaine, who's here now, on that kind of exploratory visit, asking questions, could this be a place to be? And they were going to visit other sites on the border. And so I think it sounds like it was a really healthy discernment for the community to pick this area in particular. What was it that made brought you down to be part of the project?
Well, I really think that the Lord has led me here little by little in my life, really. I was a math teacher for years and loved the kids, and then really felt called to South America. So I went to Chile, returned to the United States, worked in a Hispanic ministry in Philadelphia, went back to Peru, then came back to the States, and then when this opened up, it just seems that I have been working with the Hispanic community and with migrants for really, I guess, the second part of my life, you know. The first part was kind of the teacher part, and then the second part was really the with my Hispanic heart. I'll say I was a Hispanic heart. So
all I'm thinking of right now, like, is just math teacher, and it's like, what is it with the border here and math people?
Hey.
Because you got a math guy right over here with Brian. And it's kind of like, what is it? Like, this is like catnip to math folks. This border minister. Like, what's going on there?
It's a beautiful gift. It's a beautiful gift.
Math,
the universal language, Joe.
I am, for the record, pro-math. I just don't get it. But pro-math. So I'm thinking of this strong intuition of God leading you into religious life. And, you know, I can only assume that there's also an intuition, hopefully, that of God leading you in your religious life. And I'm wondering, have there been those kind of moments of intuition, of impulse in your ministry here on the border where you felt that, like, God's wanting this from me right now?
Coming down here was definitely a strong impulse. Like, the congregation, threw it out to the congregation and said, are there any sisters who would like to come down? And we were going to send one sister. So I wrote my letter and said, You know, I talked all about me being in Peru and Chile and, like, I'm the one to send. I ripped that up, and I said, no, I don't have to sell myself. Then I talked about going to the border that summer and how wonderful. And I thought, no, that's crazy, too. Rip that up. So I just wrote the note and said I felt that the Lord wanted me to come to the border, and I was volunteering. It was about two sentences, I guess.
Wow.
You know? And that was it. And I figured the congregation knows me. The Lord knows me if he wants me to be here. Now, I don't know if any other sisters really wanted to come or not, you know, but in the end, they did ask me to come down and represent our branch of the congregation. Down here, I guess it's not like that strong, strong pull, but it's a comfort, and it's knowing that this is where I'm supposed to be at this point. It's that kind of a feeling. And I just feel so blessed to be here. So I know that this is where the Lord wants me to be at this point. It's more of a comfort and a knowing and a knowing that this is where the Lord wants me to be.
That's a beautiful source of consolation, right? To be engaged in life and community in such a way that you feel like, wow, I feel very consoled. This is where the Lord wants me to be. And so this is my response. I was wondering if maybe you could describe for us what is the ministry of the IHM Sisters down here? Maybe describe it for our listeners about kind of what the project looks like in terms of what you do and what you focus on down here as a community.
So when we were coming down and the sisters were investigating all along the border, almost everybody said, the religious congregations and the organizations, they said, don't try and start something new. They said, there are things going down at the border. Look for something that you can contribute to, that you can help with, but you don't have to start your own ministry, like an IHM ministry. So, and almost everybody said, go to McAllen. That's where they need it most. For the work, for the number of migrants that are crossing, and also for the support, the religious community support that is in McAllen area. So, like, we have a group of sisters called the Valley Sisters, which are the Sisters of Mercy, the Franciscan Sisters, ourselves, the IHMs, and we also, Sister Norma Pimentel is now part of us, and we consider the Jesuits not as valley, like the Valley Brothers or Valley Fathers, I think.
Thank you.
We're one of the Valley Girls.
You're one of the Valley Girls. Sounds like a singing group, actually. But anyway, so we had a meeting with Sister Norma Pimentel after we were here for a couple months. She said, what are you doing? We explained. She said, great, keep doing it. Most of our effort has been going to Catholic Charities in McAllen and greeting the migrants who are crossing over. And we do different things. We either help with the clothing, help getting food ready. I feel more comfortable just going around and talking to people. And that, I just find, for me, is a blessing, that you just go and want to know how they're doing, where they're going, pray with them, and just let them know that they are important. Because, you know, they've been by themselves. They're coming up by themselves normally. And then they meet, they get to McAllen. They've crossed by themselves. They're all by, you know, that just their family or maybe a woman by herself or children. And just to let them know that they are considered a real person, a dignified person, that they are welcomed here. I just think, for me, it's a blessing for me to be able to try and do that anyway. And then that's on this side of the border. And then on the other side, we are happy to go over to Reynosa, usually on Thursdays, sometimes on Tuesdays, where we will go to the two camps of Casa de Migrantes and to Senda de Vida Dos. And there we'll meet the people who are waiting to come across the border. And the Jesuits, you're so supportive of the people and encouraging them to wait for, now they're waiting about 5 months, some of them, to cross the border, but they want to do it the right way. So we're happy to go over there, talk with people, celebrate Mass with the Jesuits. And then we usually have some kind of activity with the people, maybe a bingo.
That's right.
Yeah, and the prize, the prizes are really big. They're things like deodorant and soap.
Big soap, big deodorant. Yeah. Jumbo-sized deodorant.
That's right. We're going to have a bingo this week with the little, with the kids, the 8-year-olds and
okay.
older. Because they're learning about United States money.
Great.
So we're going to do a bingo with money on prices of things on a bingo card. And so we'll take over little prizes for them that this maybe some chocolates and some.
Oh, that's going to be super
we'll
popular.
Thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a certain age group only.
Okay.
This time. Joe and Brian, you can come if you want.
Okay, well, thanks. That's what I was waiting to hear.
Brian will be doing long division with the nerds.
Okay. Wait, really? I could do long division?
So, you you mentioned talking with people. And you also mentioned when your fellow sister was saying that you're here and you're just a normal person. You're being yourself. And so much of your being yourself is just you sharing yourself with people, talking with them. And you're someone that we always see. You're like never, you're just standing around twiddling. I was like, no, like every time I see you, you're always, you're sitting down with someone. You're talking with them. And that is such an important part of your mystery is building those connections. And even if these could be connections that maybe only last for just part of an afternoon, at the HRC or for an extended period of time at one of the shelters, sometimes it's enough of a connection that, man, we come to know someone that kind of stays with us, that we think about from time to time after they've moved on to their next place. Is there someone that kind of has captured a part of your memory and your heart, and stays with you?
Okay, well, let me share two, okay? Okay, the one, I don't even remember her name, okay? But it was a woman that we were helping to cross the border because she was vulnerable. She was probably 8 months pregnant or so. All right, so I was kind of working with her, and she was going to Philadelphia. And so, of course, that's where I'm from. So I said, oh, we're in Philadelphia. She was going to the parish where I had been for 7 years.
Wow.
She was a Haitian woman. So, of course, I called the Haitian priest who is there. I called a woman in charge of the Haitian community, and they were going to get baby clothes for her and all this. So it was great. She just lived like about 2 blocks from the church. So that's fine. She's all set up. I'm coming out of Mass one day about 7:30, and I get a phone call, a text from her. And she says, Sister Rose, she said, I think I'm having the baby. Now, she's in the house by herself. She said, I think I'm having the baby, and I don't know what to do.
She's texting you.
Wow.
And she's in Philadelphia, and I'm in Texas.
Oh, it's like, you know, what am I supposed to do here?
It's like, what do I do, you know? So because I had been in that neighborhood, I knew some of the people in Catholic Charities in Philadelphia. So I called a woman who was in charge of Casa del Carmen, and she said, no problem. They had a Haitian nurse in Catholic Charities that she was going to send over to the house and took care of it. You know, they got her to the hospital, and she had the baby, sent me a picture and all that. Okay. So that was kind of like the providence of God, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Another person that sticks in my mind was in Catholic Charities in McAllen. Of course, when there are a lot of the migrants there, they're all laying on the floor, right? They're on the mats and they're resting. So this one day I go in and everybody's laying on the mats and they're just kind of relaxing. And there's this one young man sitting on a chair all by himself, like in the middle of all these mats. And he has like a little bag beside him, but he's just sitting all straight up. So I went and I got a chair and I sat next to him. And so we started to talk. His name was Lester. He was from Guatemala. And He had been in a detention center, I guess, or a holding center for unaccompanied minors for 3 months. That was his 18th birthday that day. So on his 18th birthday, the immigration brought him to Catholic Charities. So he's sitting there on his 18th birthday all by himself. So he called his mother in Guatemala, and he said, but she's not going to understand you because she doesn't speak. I think she spoke Quechua or something. So I said, no, but she's going to understand you. You know, you're going to talk on the phone. So he talked with his mom, and he said to me, she is so poor. But anyway, so he was happy with that. And I went to the kitchen and talked with the women in the kitchen at the respite center. So they got me a cake. So we came out, and there was a whole group of people from Venezuela. And they were all in a big circle, and they were sharing with one another. So I told them, I said, that boy over there, I said, it's his 18th birthday. So we had the cake. We called him over. They all sang to Lester, and it was just wonderful. He had icing on his face. He was just so happy, you know.
Yeah, I think we see that all over the place in our ministry with the people we accompany, and sometimes feeling like you're connecting with the right person at the right place at the right time, and just being grateful for that and trying to offer the little bit that you can, you know, giving of yourself. That's part of this work of charity that we're doing and engaged in here. Of course, this season we're dedicating to the theme of Lent, and one of the big themes of Lent is almsgiving, right? Which there is that part of charity that goes beyond any sort of financial contribution. That's just that giving of self, which I think you've represented really well in talking about. And then, you know, there's oft also material support, which is a big part of both of our ministries here, right? We bring donations for hygiene products and cleaning supplies and stuff like that to send it to. And the sisters have been discerning about how they can provide some support to shelters in Mexico, too. So could you tell us a little bit about what called that out of you and what it looks like?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really glad you asked, okay? Because before we even left our convents in Philadelphia and Scranton, and, you know, people were giving us money.
Wow.
You know, This is for the mission. This is not for, you know, it's not for you. It's for the mission. This is for the mission. So from the very beginning, I was writing thank you notes, you know, to everybody. So I'm like the thank you note writer in our little convent. And people are so generous. They are really, well, you know, they are just so generous. So our sisters normally every month pick a charity, and they give a donation themselves, each sister, and then the convent matches it. And at least once a year, each convent sends donations to us from the sisters. Families, I just got $50 in the mail the other day from a sister who wanted to make a donation to us in honor of a couple who had just gotten married. You know, so we receive money like this all the time. Everybody is just so generous to us. So the question is then, how do we use this money? So at the Respite Center in McAllen at the Catholic Charities, we're always looking out for what is needed. So last week, for example, we went to Omega 99 and bought about 100 pairs of shoes. Okay. Now, the shoes are really, really good. They cost $1 or $2 a piece.
Oh, jeez.
So we've gone to Omega 99 a lot of times to buy shoes because the people who are crossing over, especially if they come through the river, they have flip-flops on. They're going to the northern states where it's cold, where there's snow. So we go and we just get a variety of these. They're sneakers, really, and take them to the Catholic Charities. If they need, we buy deodorant, we buy combs and brushes. Anything we see is low, we try and go out and clothing for people. So we do a lot of that. That's really here in McAllen in Texas. Over in Mexico, the one camp is Senda de Vida Dos. They're living in tents. They're sleeping on the floor, on the ground. And they have a communal kitchen, and they don't always really have enough food for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we talked about it, and at least once a month, we go to Sam's, and we use donation money to get big cans of chicken, big cans of tuna, vegetables, oil, anything that we know that they can use there. We, every month, also give a donation to the sisters in Casa de Migrantes to use for the mothers and to use for medicine for the people. So we're always grateful to our sisters and to our friends, our families, for the contributions they give us, because we never really have to think, do we have money to do this? We always do. If there's a need, we can always help. And we're just so grateful for that. We're grateful for the people.
You know, thinking about the border here, I think there's a lot of lenses through which someone could look at the border and the situation that we encounter. You could look at it from a political lens and see, you know, okay, this is a political issue. This is a boundary between two countries. How do we navigate it? What's the political will and what kind of policies should be governed? You can look at it from a humanitarian lens, okay? There are needs. Are those needs being met? What essential needs aren't being met? And how do we collaborate to meet them? Another way, I think, to look at the border is through the lens of faith. And so as a couple of Jesuits sitting here with an Immaculate Heart of Mary's sister, I wonder if you could maybe just shed some light for people who haven't spent time on the border, just to, because I think there's a lot that's talked about, certainly from the political lens about the border, but what do you see here every day when you look at the border through the lens of faith?
Okay. Let me quote you from Pope Francis. Okay.
We love that.
Yeah. Okay. He came to Philadelphia in 2015, and he said this to the people. Do not be – he was talking to the refugees and to the migrants. And he said, do not be discouraged by whatever challenges and hardships you face. I ask you not to forget that, like those who came before you here, you bring many gifts to your new nation. By contributing your gifts, you will not only find your place here, you will help to renew society from within. And I just think that I have asked some, not a whole lot, but I have asked some of the migrants who have crossed over into the United States. I've told them what Pope Francis said about them and asked them what gifts they have brought to the United States. And their answers are beautiful. They say things like, I'm a hard worker. I'm honest. I'm compassionate. I help other people. Just really very beautiful things. And I think that sometimes we look at the migrants and we think, oh, aren't they lucky? They're coming into the United States. They're getting so much, and we're going to help them so much. And that hopefully is true. But also true are the gifts that they bring to us, and that our society should be different because of their presence here. And our local parishes should be different if the parish is embracing the migrants and acknowledging that they are children of God and that they are struggling like everybody else, and they want to help in the society. They want to help where they are. I'm just thinking some of the people in Casa de Migrantes, they've been there, and every week, twice a week, they celebrate Mass with the Jesuits, and they're completely committed to the faith. They help with the readings at Mass. The little kids are the altar servers. The little kids are sitting on your lap when you, if you sit down. And they are really, they have become really part. They know that they are part of the church. And maybe in their own countries, they didn't have that opportunity. And I just think that's a beautiful thing. And hopefully they will carry that to their own parishes and to their own neighborhoods and make the church more vibrant here in the United States, too.
Absolutely. They bring so many gifts. There's so much that they are contributing. And we see that in our own ministry, right? It's definitely not a one-way ministry where we're coming down and we're bringing donations and we're helping and we're making things better. It's so much a give and a take, and we get and receive so much from migrants in our ministry. And part of that I'm so motivated by and strengthened by is their own faith and the example they set with the way that they live and practice their faith. You know, one of the things that we do oftentimes during our celebration of the Mass is when it gets to the communion rite, you know, we offer communion, of course, to anybody who's received First Communion, feels prepared to receive the Eucharist. But we also offer people, if they want to come up and just to receive a prayer and a blessing. And so not infrequently, Sister Rose, when you're with us, we love to have you participate. And when people come up, just for you to be able to say a little prayer and ask for God's blessing for them in their life. So just wondered if you could share what that experience is like for you and how you found it to be.
I am so honored to be able to do that. I really am. And the first time we came over into Mexico, we celebrated Mass with you, and you did that. I had never seen that happen. I was just amazed, happy. And then when you asked me, invited me very often to come up and offer the blessing, to the people. And I'm just surprised that they line up to come to me because I'm not a priest, you know. But I'm just so honored to do that. And I don't know if you know what I say. I don't know what you say, but I always say, que Dios te bendiga y que María nuestra madre te acompañe. Okay? And then I say, Dios y María te amen mucho. So I tell them, I ask for God's blessing. I ask that Mary accompanies them. And then I just say that the Lord and Mary love you very much. And then they always say amen, and they nod, and they smile. But for me, it is just, it's a grace for me to be able to do that. And I'm thankful for that. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Wow. Just the importance of those blessings, and then that sense of the nearness of God and the tenderness and the love of God for them in such difficult situations, and still knowing that God is with them. That nearness, that blessing, that beatitude of being with God is something that often, that's such an essential, if not the essential part of heaven. And I'm wondering, is there a way of thinking about heaven, a way of understanding and imagining heaven that especially speaks to you?
Okay, now I heard that question before.
Oh, I bet you have.
The other podcast.
You came prepared.
So I was thinking, gosh, what is my thought? What's my idea? And just the other day, I was thinking about the visitation and the welcoming that Mary and Elizabeth were sharing there. And Mary was happy to see Elizabeth. Elizabeth was happy to see Mary. They embraced. Jesus was right there with them. And I thought, I'll bet in heaven, I'll bet it's Mary and Jesus at the gate, welcoming us. It's not just Jesus. It's not just the Lord. It's Mary is also there, I think, welcoming us as she welcomed Elizabeth, or Elizabeth welcomed her. So I think that might be a new idea that I have of heaven, the welcoming of both the Lord and Mary.
How fitting that this very hospitable image of heaven is something that speaks to you, who is you are yourself a presence of hospitality to the migrants when they come. The thought of you receiving hospitality when you yourself have given so much hospitality, that's quite a beautiful thing to think about.
You know, Sister Rose, this is, of course, your first time on the podcast, but it's not the first time you've been mentioned on the podcast. So, you know, I wonder, you told me a really funny story the other day, so I wondered if you could share it, because there was a time, maybe a year or so ago, where Father Louis, when he was still co-hosting, brought you up on the podcast and had some nice things to say about you, but you got teased a little bit by your fellow sisters about that quote. So would you mind sharing with our listeners that story?
Yes, I would mind, Jay. Okay, so last summer, I was back up in Philadelphia area for our chapter, our meetings that we had. And we were at the lunch table, and one of the sisters said she heard this podcast. She was in bed listening to it, and she jumped up because she heard my name. So, of course, the other sisters wanted to know what it was. And so they got the podcast, you know, you know, through
pulled
her phone.
Up. Yeah, their phone, yeah.
And anyway, in it, I think Louis was asked to name somebody, I guess, who he appreciated or appreciated. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Anyway, he mentioned me, you know, Sister Rose, and he said very nice things about me. Which was lovely. And then he said, and she's in her 70s. And she gets down on the ground and she can get back up again. And she's in her 70s. He said it like about three times, I think. And the sisters, of course, were teasing me. She can walk and she can eat and she can talk. And she's in her 70s. You know? So anyway, so they really enjoyed it. I did call Louis and I thanked him because I would never... Well, he's going to hear if this is good. Okay. But, I mean, he was so really very sincere, mm-hmm. and I was so very touched. You know, I wouldn't want to make fun of what he said. But the part about the in her 70s, well, they thought that was great. You know, they're laughing.
It's amazing the things you can do, even in your 70s.
Yeah, I know.
You can do amazing work of service. You can join us on our podcast. You can do so many things. Sister Rose, yet again, we just want to thank you for taking your time to join us for this podcast. We love, most of all, joining you in ministry, collaborating with you in ministry here, you and your community. There's a great spirit of the religious here on the border who are collaborating very well. And so we're grateful for that, and we're especially grateful that you took time to join us for the podcast today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. We're grateful to Sister Rose Patrice for joining us.
Remember to subscribe to this podcast to hear more about the U.S.-Mexico border from a Catholic perspective. You can visit our website at delcamino.org.
If you're curious about Jesuit life or know someone who is, visit beajesuit.org to learn more about a religious vocation to the Society of Jesus.
This podcast is edited and produced by the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the U.S. and hosted by the Jesuit Post.
We'll see you next time on the Jesuit Border Podcast.
Que Dios os bendiga.